I am convinced that one of the best ways to have success in the field, either as a hunter or fisherman, is simply to be out there as often as you can. Success in this case referring to fish caught or game shot, and out there referring to in the field and at locations where you expect to find such things. Yes, there are any number of tactics and experiences you can acquire or employ that can improve your chances for success, such as becoming proficient at moose calling or learning to work a topwater buzzer for pike. But one of the absolute biggest things you can do to boost your chances for success is to simply be in the field. As I used to tell my deer hunting buddies back in Kansas, you can't shoot a deer sitting on your couch. It's also true that we're more willing to spend time outside when we're comfortable while we're out there. For most folks, if we're having to deal with too much in the way of discomfort, we're a lot more likely to pack it in early or not go at all. And let's face it, during the non-winter months in Alaska, most outdoor discomfort can be boiled down to two main sources: bugs and rain. Today, let's talk about the second one, keeping the rain at bay and staying dry while out and about. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. Think about it for a moment. If you didn't have to deal with rain and biting insects at all, how would that impact your time spent outdoors? Would you make it out more often? I think the answer for a lot of people would be yes. But the insects and rain aren't going to go away, and hibernating in the house with the Xbox isn't the answer. So what we're left with is trying to find effective ways to deal with those two issues for the occasions they present themselves as an issue. What are your solutions and strategies? Are you happy with them? Do they work? Or do you wish there was something better? The difficult part of topics like this is that different folks have different tolerance levels when it comes to discomfort. My wife is, in my estimation, a tough person when it comes to dealing with just about anything. But she'll throw in the towel on exposure to mosquitoes before I will. So please understand that as I toss out thoughts and suggestions concerning the rain, I do so knowing that for some of you, any or all of this still might not be enough, while for others, much of it doesn't even need to be said. Still, I think it's good fodder for consideration, with fishing and berry picking underway and hunting right around the corner. Again, today we'll tackle the issue of staying dry. First of all, trying to stay dry is not a recent phenomena. Even if many of today's newer fabrics and membranes designed to provide that dryness are, getting wet and cold in the search for fish and game has always been, at best, an uncomfortable inconvenience, and at worst, life-threatening. Various indigenous tribes in different parts of the world have all tried their hand at using whatever natural materials were available to stay as dry as possible. For example, as far back as the 13th century, Amazonian Indians used a substance that they derived from rubber trees to coat both their footwear and headgear. 500 years later, and thousands of miles away, Europeans were trying to keep dry as well. One man, French engineer François Freneau, developed a turpentine solution used on rubber and applied to fabric to create what's widely regarded as the first waterproof fabric. This happened in 1748. Fast forwarding a bit to 1823, Scottish chemist Charles Mackintosh came up with a process for waterproof fabric that he patented. His process involved sandwiching a layer of molded rubber between two layers of fabric, treated with a rubber naphtha liquid. Once the bugs to the process of applying the solution to the cloth were worked out, waterproof fabric began being produced in factories in 1824. Coats made of this waterproof fabric became such the rage that even today raincoats in the United Kingdom are called Mackintoshes, or Macs for short. The next big step, at least the next one that I'm going to highlight, took place in 1969. In that year, Wilbert Gore, his son, and another scientist came up with a material called expanded polytetrafluoroethylene. Yeah, try saying that five times fast. They introduced it to the public under the trademark Gore-Tex, a word that still today conjures up images of the best of the best types of rain gear. Essentially, the material they created is composed of two layers. The outer layer is a durable fabric. The inner layer is a membrane that contains billions upon billions of tiny pores. These pores are smaller than water droplets, so water can't get in, but they do allow for water vapor molecules formed from perspiration to get out. Put another way, it keeps rain out while allowing your body to still breathe. Again, Gore-Tex fabrics are still very, very popular today. Gore's original patents expired a few years back, and now a number of companies manufacture similar fabrics that carry their own catchy names. Some such names you may be familiar with include Hi-Vent, Helitech, Conduit, H2NO, and Omnitech. There are many more, but these are the ones associated with some of the larger companies. So, people have been trying to stay dry for centuries. Where does that leave you for the opening of moose season, for example, should the weather turn somewhat less than sunny? First of all, a couple of things do come to mind. One is that there is likely no perfect solution. There may, however, be a number of very, very good ones. The other thing is, I'd like to reiterate that different folks have different tolerances. You need to decide what works for you. Also, something many of you have heard me harp on endlessly on this program is that things are different here. Staying dry and staying warm often cross the line from merely a comfort thing to life-saving. That's something to bear in mind as you decide to gear up. When you go with rain gear, you've got a couple of ways you can go. Waterproof and breathable, or waterproof but non-breathable. For the sake of simplicity, we'll consider the former to be something like Gore-Tex, and the latter to be something like the commercial versions of Helly Hansen or Grundon's. In my opinion, the non-breathable option stands a better bet of keeping you dry, because they are completely waterproof. However, because they don't breathe, if you're doing anything particularly active, you're going to sweat heavily. If you go the breathable route, a high-quality fabric will work for most situations and keep you more comfortable during more strenuous activities. However, if you're out all day in a really heavy downpour, you're going to get wet to some degree. Here's my advice. Take it for what it's worth. Your undergarments deserve consideration, too. Go with synthetics, not cotton. A good polypropylene or other synthetic-based layer, if it's cold enough to merit long johns, topped with yet more synthetics. My favorite happens to be fleece. It's light, warm, and dries fairly quickly. If you have to go natural, go with wool or a wool blend. Top that off with the best rain gear you can afford. There's a few items in life that the line of thought goes that you get what you pay for. I would argue that when it comes to rain gear, that holds true. Better quality stuff costs more and is generally much better quality stuff. I tend to think that anything that has the potential to be life-saving needs to receive a bit more consideration than simply poking through a closeout bin at the nearest Walmart. You can still find good deals to save money, but don't skimp on the product itself. One of my favorite ways to save a few bucks is to look for color patterns that have been discontinued at larger places like Cabela's. The other thing to mention in staying dry is to consider what you put on your feet. For the longest time, the rubber-coated neoprene extra-tough boots were the boot for this part of Alaska, and probably more. I don't know how long they've been popular, but a whole lot of folks favored them even back when I moved to Alaska in the early 90s. They're still a very popular boot, but in recent years, muck boots have also become very, very popular. In either case, you're looking at a boot that's a combination of neoprene and rubber that goes to about knee height, that's absolutely waterproof and less damaged. Depending on what it is you happen to be doing, perhaps a knee boot may very well be the ticket. It's also possible that a hip wader may be the way to go. My own choice is a boot similar to muck boots, but by a different company, called Boggs. They use thicker neoprene on the boot shaft, so it's more durable, and they are easily the most comfortable, driest boots I've ever owned. Just this week, I received a new work-issue rain jacket. I have high hopes for it, and I'll possibly be putting it to the test in a couple of weeks during our high school float camp. It's made by a company called NRS, and it's easily the lightest, most flexible rain jacket I've ever put on. According to one of the tags I found on it, NRS calls their breathable waterproof membrane Hyprotex. My boss has one, and he raves about his, so I'm optimistic it will do a very good job of keeping me dry and comfortable. If nothing else, it's likely to be a big step up from having to take the time to coat what I own with rubber tree derivatives. So there you have it. Staying dry while it's raining. Now we just need to talk about how to keep those biting insects at bay. Perhaps next week. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.